Struggling households were forced to reduce spending on essentials or overborrowed to cope with the cost of living crisis. The latest report from the ESRI also found that many low-income families were unaware of some of their welfare entitlements or they didn't know how to access them. The financial changes these households were forced to make are linked, the ESRI says, to lasting negative impacts. For more on the report, I'm joined by Lucy Martin, who's research officer in the Behavioural Research Unit at the ESRI. And you're very welcome to studio, Lucy. This report covers 2022, the years 2022 to 2024, which, as we know, was a time of real financial pain for people. And while there were supports from government, it was people with less who suffered most yet again. And they were forced to make risky changes to their finances to cope. Tell us about some of the coping mechanisms that they engaged in.
That's right. So one of the main findings from our report is that not only did almost all low-income households, so 9 out of 10, have to make cuts to daily essentials like food and energy, but we also found that most low-income households, over half of them, they had to make risky financial decisions to cope with rising costs. Mm-hmm. So this included things like borrowing money to pay the bills, going into arrears on your rent or mortgage, eating into savings, or even putting off healthcare or education plans because of rising costs. And of course, all of these high-risk decisions can snowball and negatively impact people's financial well-being in the long run.
We'll talk a bit about the long-term negative impacts as well. And what is maybe surprising and extraordinary to people is there was additional help available through welfare entitlements that in some cases they didn't know about, or the whole system was just too difficult to access.
That's right. So one of the findings in our report is that fewer people than you might expect were actually taking up some of the benefits that were available for low-income households to help them cope with rising costs. For example, among very low-income households, almost all of them would have been likely eligible for things like a medical card, a GP visit card, and yet only about half of them reported to us that they had one. We found similar results for housing-related benefits, rent tax credit, HAP, and so on. And what we found when we dug a little deeper into why that might have been the case was that, first off, up to a third of low-income households told us that the reason that they didn't use particular benefits that we thought might be relevant to them weren't due to not being eligible. Instead, often they cited lack of information or not knowing that a benefit was relevant to them.
And are they overwhelmed by the situation they're in, the financial crisis they're in, and that they can't then have the wherewithal to access what's available to them?
Well, we did find that low-income households, especially families with children, and especially households that had to make these high-risk decisions, found it highly stressful to make changes to cope with rising costs. Mm-hmm. And when we asked households who did use government benefits what their experience was like, they did report that, especially for benefits that had means tests or that were maybe a little bit more complicated to access, they found it quite difficult to find out about benefits and if they were entitled to them, and then to navigate the system. So filling out lengthy forms, showing up for appointments, proving you meet the criteria, all of this can be a frustrating endeavour, or at least that's what our evidence suggests.
And yet there has to be a system, doesn't there, to access welfare benefits. But how can the Department of Social Protection work to simplify access to what people are entitled to?
So our evidence suggests that because of the complexity of the welfare system, people, especially the most vulnerable, might have missed out. So what can we do about that? We do have some best practice from behavioral science around simplifying benefits application processes. So you could think about auto-enrollment when you already know with available data that people are available. Mm-hmm. You could think about pre-filling forms. For example, if you're filling out a tax return, revenue will often have all the details in already, right? So that could be something else to think about for benefits. And you could also simplify information that people have access to. For example, using benefits calculators, where people could see through only one channel everything they could be entitled to and how to apply for it using a single point of application.
Is the online availability, is that something that is simplifying access or is that complicating access for some people?
So in our study, we didn't ask specifically about online versus offline channels, but other research certainly points to both pros and cons of the digitization of government. It can be very practical for people who otherwise wouldn't get transportation, for example, to a welfare office. Mm-hmm. But equally for people who are digitally excluded, there might be additional challenges.
Just briefly, Lucy, just sum up for me the long-term impact.
The long-term impact is that households had to make decisions during the crisis that can impact their financial well-being long-term, but that also leaves them less prepared for when the next crisis hits. So that means the welfare system really needs to be resilient and simple enough to access so that the households that were already hit hard by the last crisis are able to avoid having to make further high-risk decisions in the future.
All right. Well, Lucy Martin from the ESRI, thank you very much indeed for telling us about this report.